Well, it is lovely to have fellowship. And it's very hard, I know, to stop speaking when you're with godly people. You want to speak and speak and speak, especially if it's the things of the Lord. It's one of the great disciplines of life to say no to that and to make sure you go and speak to Jesus, so that He knows you didn't enjoy someone else's fellowship as much as His. Imagine going to bed without having spoken to Christ or had time for Christ because you wanted much more the fellowship of others. But I agree with you. It's hard to turn away fellowship, especially such lovely people, lovely godly people. It's hard to turn away such people. Well, if you're being used of God, if you're sitting there speaking about the Lord, then of course you have the right to be speaking right through the night. God's there with you. And oftentimes I've been in company. I was thinking of this now. I've been sitting with a crowd of people in a room, more conscious of Jesus, more communing with Jesus than anyone else in the room, more speaking to Him about what's been spoken of. And finally, when I do speak, sometimes I say just what I think the Lord's been telling me about what they're saying. Anyway, commune with God. Even when you're with people, you can commune with God. It was Brother Lawrence, Practice of the Presence of God. You know that book? Well, it's a good book. And it was written way before we have the clarity of our terms of evangelism today, but he met with God, this man, and he said that he found that fellowship with God didn't cease when he left the time with God. He had to work in the kitchen, pots and pans and scrubbing and people all over the kitchen. And Brother Lawrence said, for some reason it got to the place in his life through practicing the presence of God that in the kitchen with all the pots and pans he was as close to God and as in tender fellowship with God as he was when he was alone. That's precious. To walk with God, not only when you're in the quiet time, but to leave the quiet time, to walk with God through the day, practicing the presence of God, even in company, even in crowds, to be in touch with Jesus, to be speaking to Him, even when you're speaking with others. You must practice that. Andrew Murray, in South Africa, the most loved Christian in the history of South Africa, there's no man that was so loved as Andrew Murray by all of God's people across our land. Though he's been dead for so many years, our land was so rich spiritually through him. If only God gave us another Andrew Murray. But you know, in his old age, Andrew Murray, of course, had shaken the world by that time. The only true revival our country ever knew came through him. And Andrew Murray, in his old age, was known by everyone. The drunks, the wicked. When he walked down a street, everyone stopped. All the visitors from England and Cape Town, under the great Table Mountain. Everyone knew, there's Andrew Murray. And everyone would stop. They say when he walked from the church down the Adderley Street, the main street of our city, a priest in his church, had that great privilege a number of times. The great pulpit. Oh, but when he walked down that street, everyone stopped. Even the drunks and the down and out people, their hat off. Everything came to a standstill as he walked, but he was oblivious to it. He just walked. One day as he was walking, everyone stopping everywhere, traffic stopping. Suddenly he fell. He fell. With a gasp. A few began to run, but the first person who was closest to him was a policeman, an English-speaking policeman. And he lifted him up. Helped him back on his feet. The whole crowd came. There was silence in the street, absolute silence. The policeman said, "What is wrong? Why did you fall, Dominie?" They called them Dominies in South Africa, ministers. "Why did you fall? What's wrong?" Andrew Murray said, "No, just leave me, please. Leave me be now. This policeman said, I won't let you go. You tell me what's wrong. I won't let go of you, sir. He held him. Andrew Murray looked at him and realized he had to give an answer. A tear came down his face. Good crowd were listening. But oh, just for a moment. Just for a moment. Lost the consciousness of the presence of God. So unaccustomed to that, he literally, physically fell down. So many years walked, conscious he was walking with God, presence of God. And Enoch walked with God, it was something very holy. It wasn't a superficial testimony. And I think if Enoch could walk so with God, and Andrew Murray could walk so with God, you and I can. Even in a crowd, communing with God, walking with God, conscious of God with you. So in the nights when you have fellowship, be in touch with God. Even though the fellowship is sweet with people, and I don't blame you longing for it. I have an apology. Seems a dear godly man spoke to me about one of the appeals I made and said that there was one or two of you, I hope not many more, who perhaps found that difficult, the first appeal I made, or the second, I'm not too sure, where I prayed with you and asked you to pray after me and to vow to God, by thy grace, I will never neglect God's time again. Time I need to be with Jesus, the day I die. Well, it seems one or two of you felt better to say I vow. A very, very strong word. So I want to ask all of you to understand that from my heart I know that the most important thing in your life is never to neglect the quiet time, and I so longed to make it so radical that you would find this something you could never, ever lose yourself from. But I didn't mean to make you fear. I want you to know something. I mean this. You don't fear God when you're His child. It might sound wrong. Love Him. Perfect love casts out all fear. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. God's calling you to such a trust, such a love. You could see Jesus Christ's face just for one moment. I wish He could stand in the pulpit and not say one word, just look at you. All of you would lose your fear who are Christ's children. You saw the love. All the fears would just vanish. You'd know you're safe. No, there's fear if you're playing the fool. If you really are not right, I don't blame you here in grieving God, but God doesn't stand over us with a rod of iron, you know. I think our brother said that the other day. Smash you if you make a vow and say, oh God, by thy grace, I vow, by thy grace, I'm not going to miss it again that time. Oh, if circumstances come, you find it virtually impossible through circumstances. God doesn't stand there and say, now that vow's broken. No, 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 I don't mean to bring you into that bondage. God doesn't stand over you with a rod of iron, let me tell you that. He stands over you with arms of love. All the way through. All the way through. No matter what the devil tells you, He loves you. He loves you. But I have prayed that prayer with many, many people, and I don't know anyone that's ever stumbled over it until perhaps a few of you here that had fear, but I respect your fear. You don't want to make a vow that you can't keep. It was better not to make it at all. So, I was the one who led you in that prayer. And you take it from my heart. God isn't going to hold you and whip you if somehow in circumstances that you never knew could come upon your life, you were not able to get down and read your chapters, and well, perhaps you can learn what Andrew Murray and Brother Lawrence learned, that even if you're not there behind closed doors, you can still commune with God. Mary Morrison, I think some of you know her, Mary Peckham, she said she was so hard on people about the quiet time until she had her children, and she found she had to be scrubbing the floors with children crawling over her while she was praying. That was her quiet time. But she didn't miss it. You see, don't be involved. You're not missing it if you held up with things. Just take what moments you can with both hands. Be amazed how many moments there are, even if circumstances come down on you. But I'll tell you something, if you're right with God and you want God's best, you'll be stunned how much time there is. All the time you need. I don't care how busy life becomes. One man actually said to me, Keith, you're a preacher. You should come into the hard world and find out. I have no time. You say you must give all this time. You want to come and be me, get in my shoes. It's impossible. I don't have time for the God like this. I said, you're a liar. You're a liar. I was very, not lovingly saying it. I said it from my heart, you're a liar. Tragically, you're lying to yourself, sir. There's no such a thing as no time for God. And you're lying, telling me there's no time for God. If God was first in your life, you'd find all the time you need. And if your work keeps you from God and you have no time for God, get out of your work! It's not the will of God. It'll kill you. But every single one of us, God is first, will find amazing time if God really is first and you're looking for the time. You'll be stunned how others can sit there wanting to talk in lunchtime. You can find time for God. If you didn't make the time before, find the time. You'll be stunned. So, that's probably the first time I ever apologized in 27 years of preaching. But I felt I should. I don't want anyone who in their integrity and longing not to grieve God through saying I vow needed perhaps to have clarity there. God isn't going to whip you. He'll love you. He'll miss the quiet time. He'll be there waiting. You didn't come. He's not going to whip you, smash you and hate you. You trust now and look for the time. You'll be stunned how much there is. Lord, bless us now in these moments. Thank you for all these young people, for everyone here, for the way they love Thee. Oh Lord, I've spoken to so many, and I don't know if anything I've ever said in this pulpit would have been any blessing compared with the blessing of everyone, I think, that I've spoken to. Almost everyone. I don't know if anyone could have been so blessed through anything of this week as I have been blessed. Looking in their eyes, seeing their tears, hearing their words, integrity, transparency, longing to be the best they can be for God. I thank Thee from my heart for this group of people who love God here in America. Come to them, Lord. These young people with such uprightness, such nobleness, to be here for God, to be seeking God, be laying aside this whole week for God, so they can go back there and walk with God. Oh, bless them, Lord. Thank Thee for the way they've been seeking Thee, meeting after meeting, some to be saved, and others be sore winners, to never neglect that. Oh, seeking God so earnestly. May everything we have prayed and sought Thee for work out in our lives by Thy grace. Oh God, come. Honor everyone, every prayer that's been uttered, that we may go back out there and find it work. God answered the prayer and did in my heart what I asked him to do. Come do it, Lord. Now be with us in this meeting. May we just know thy presence. Stand beside me in the pulpit, dear Lord Jesus, and speak through me. In Jesus Christ's name, the name we love, the name we live for, we ask these things. Amen. If ever I were asked to single out one chapter in the entire Bible, if ever I were asked to single out one chapter in the entire Bible that I believe a Christian should read every day of their lives, then without hesitation, I would say James chapter 3, where James says, My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. My brethren, be not many masters. Now you read in the margin, you will find it says, teachers of the oracles of God, those who would teach and preach the word of God. Can you believe this man says this? My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. In many things we offend all. In many things we offend all. My brethren, be not many masters. John Calvin said this word means self-appointed preachers. Self-constituted preachers. Men who were never ordained by God, or separated by God to preach, to teach. That is what Calvin says James is speaking of here. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. The Amplified Version says, for you know that we teachers will be judged by a higher standard with greater severity than other people. Thus, we assume the greater accountability. We take on ourselves greater accountability to God when we handle the Word of God and dare to preach it. And the next verse is one of the most staggering verses in the entire Bible. God says, if any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man. God says, if any man in this building offend not in word, the same is a perfect man and able also to bridle the whole body, able to control every part of your character and being. You're in control. That's a statement. The Amplified Version says, if anyone does not offend in speech, he never says the wrong things, he is a fully developed character spiritually. He is a perfect man. He's able to control his whole body, to curb his entire nature. If any man, is God speaking about you? Offend not in word, the same is a perfect man. Not ultimate perfection. In the light you've been given, God says, there's victory here. He's able to control his whole body. He's in control here of his entire nature. More light, of course, comes all the way to the end. But in God's eyes, in the moment you're in, you are what you ought to be. And you know by one thing, if a man's in control, his entire nature, he's in victory. He's living in the light by one thing, God says. The foremost proof of holiness is a man's ability to refrain from entering into any conversation whereby he becomes defiled in the sight of God. The foremost proof that you're holy, a vital reality with God, is a man's ability to refrain from entering into any conversation whereby he becomes defiled in the sight of God. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm. Whithersoever the governor listeth, even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell, where every kind of beasts, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made up of the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? And the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? So doth no fountain send forth both sweet water and... Oh! Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Of all the verses in this staggering chapter, of what you can be sure the tongue will set the whole carnal nature aflame. If you're not in control of the tongue, it just sets you on fire for everything of evil. Of all the verses in this chapter, one chapter is the foundation, for without this verse, we've got nothing but condemnation on the tongue. But then God says these staggering words, if any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. One of the greatest revelations God ever gave to me of the Christian faith. One of the greatest revelations God ever gave to me of the Christian faith was when I suddenly was plunged into one of the deepest trials God had entrusted me to endure. Suddenly I was in one of the deepest trials I ever had to endure in my life. But what a revelation God gave to me in that trial. I was sitting in a meeting like you, listening to a preacher. And this man in the pulpit, suddenly knowing I was in the meeting, turned on me. And from the pulpit, began to lash out at me publicly. Began to undermine my integrity. The work I do for God, even the fruit all over. Its viability. He seemed intent on destroying me. Something came over that man. It was unbelievable as he stood up there, intent on destroying me in that meeting, forever to destroy me.
Now, I don't know whether being filled with the Spirit of God means you cannot feel hurt. Some people say that. But I was hurt. Oh, I was hurt. My heart sank. I was crushed. I held back the tears as I looked at this man and thought to myself, oh, how could anyone believe this of me? How could this man believe these things of me? Oh, I was crushed. I was crushed. By the end of that service, I was so crushed I could hardly breathe. And as everyone stood up, I wanted to get out of the door. I didn't want to speak to anyone. I wanted to speak to God. I wanted to speak to God. And I tried to get out before anyone else, but I couldn't. And as I looked at the faces all around, the tears, as they looked at me, I realized a cloud of sorrow had fallen on the whole convention through what this man had done. There was grief. The whole cloud of grief fell upon the whole convention. Everyone was grieving. As I walked, the tears, hands just hold out to me, touching me, Keith. Don't you worry, Keith. He's destroyed himself, not you. Don't worry, Keith. No one believed a word he says. He's finished. You aren't. He destroyed himself, not you. But I still didn't want to speak. I was so grieved. I just wanted to get out of that building. And I pushed past everyone. I didn't want to speak. I got out of the building and tried to get in the dark of the gardens outside of the center. But there were three preachers who stopped me. They wouldn't let me past. And in their anger, they began to indignation, anger against what this man had done, his cowardice, the unethicalness of taking the pulpit to express his griefs that he had against me. The cowardice of it. Oh, they were angry as they were crying out against in anger what he had done to me. And all the people were gathering all around, listening to these men in anger at what the man had done in his meeting. I couldn't get past them. Just as I was about to speak, the first words I was about to utter, what was going on in my heart, I was just about to speak. And my father-in-law, Jenny's father, one of the godly men of our country, loved across the land for his preaching, though he's a farmer, never been through a theological seminar. He's used in the great conventions of South Africa, more than most people have ever been used. Loved across the land. My father-in-law, Jenny's father, looking at what was happening. He was in that meeting. He pushed through the crowd. He pushed his way in front of these three men that were so angry, crying out about what the wrong the man had done. And he stood in front of them and he looked at me. A tear came down his face. It had not been easy for my father-in-law to hear what had been said about me that night. He put his hand here on my shoulder. And he said, Keith, boy, we're all in the school of God. The moment you're born of God, you're in the school of God. Some of us are in grade 1, some standard 1, some standard 6, some in matric. Some are in university level in the school of God, Keith. Only God knows what level we are. But you're in the school of God, boy. And Keith, I've learned something through the years. It's exactly the same as secular school. Think, Keith, when you were a boy. When you were still at school as a boy. You had to face tests that were given to you. As you learned. You had to face each level with an exam. And if you failed the exams, Keith, of the standard, you were in, you would have to go through it again, and you'd have to face the same exam again. There's no way of passing it, bypassing it. You fail the exam, you have to face it again until you pass it. Keith, it's exactly the same in the school of God, my boy. Trust me about this. I've seen it. I've learned it over and over. I've learned it. You're facing an extremely difficult exam here that most of us have never faced and may never have to. But Keith, if you don't pass it now, in God's eyes and in men's eyes, and men are watching you, Keith. Men are watching you, Keith. If you don't pass this exam right now, in God's eyes and men's eyes, I guarantee you, you're going to go through it again. I guarantee you're going to face this again, Keith. Now pass. Pass the exam, boy. Or face it again. And he turned and walked away. You know, every single person, these three preachers, everyone else, not a word, utter silence, disappeared at what my father-in-law said. Gone. At last I was alone. Oh, suddenly, as I stood there, no one else now but me and God, no one to talk to me, no voice to listen to now. Everything, the whole perspective of what had happened that I had gone through was changed completely in perspective. The next day, it was arranged at this convention that we would meet at a certain time in the day, all the accommodation where we were in this particular center, we'd all meet in a certain moment. It was all announced, and all the cars and combis available must be at disposal to take everyone across to another convention center, the other side of the city, to join with other people like-minded and combining. And so the time was given, all the combis were to be ready, and we weren't going to get lost going through the city. We'd all travel together and get there on time for the meeting that we were to attend. Well, as I was rushing out, realizing it was time, I suddenly became aware everyone's gone from the building. So I ran out there, all the cars going, all the cars idling, all the combis all over the parking area. Everyone sitting in the car, I was the only one. So I ran down, knowing I'm keeping everybody now. They're lingering to see if there's anybody. And here I was, the only one. So I rushed around looking for a seat. Not one car. Everybody squashed with all the cars available. Squashed in to get everybody there. No. I ran around everywhere. Nobody knew it. Suddenly, they pointed back, said, there's a combi back there, it seems, as a seat. So I ran down, keeping everybody. They all want to go. And as I ran and ran, I got close to the combi. There was a seat, but I slowed down, and my heart sank, and I saw the only seat available was next to this man that tried to destroy me the night before. Everybody in that combi, when they saw it was, their heart sank also. And they realized, here, he's got to sit next to him. Now that was God. That was no coincidence. That's how God works with us, you know. Well, I got in the combi, and we all went off. There was deathly silence. No one spoke. I saw the man in the rear view mirror who was driving. I saw his eyes like this. What am I going to do to him? Well, I looked out the window, and I prayed. I pray for my heart, oh God. Give me the grace I don't have. Give me the grace I don't have, Lord, to pass this exam. To pass this exam in God's eyes and men's eyes, and men are watching me, Lord. I want to so pass this exam that I will never, ever have to face it again. It's behind me. Please, God, I don't want to face this again. Give me the grace, God, to pass now. I turned and I looked at this man. He looked at me with such fear. By this time the Holy Spirit had smitten him. He knew his whole assessment was wrong. He was feeling terrible. Oh, he was in a state as he looked at me. And I took him by the arm. I looked him in the eyes and I said, "Sir, I want you to know I love you. I love you." I want you to know, from this time onward, I'll be praying earnestly for you, that God will bless you. So he knew as he looked in my eyes that I was not being obnoxious. He knew I said it in integrity, from my heart, and I meant it. And I saw something in that man's eyes that I shall treasure for all eternity. One of the most precious moments of life was what I saw right then. I saw in the eyes of a man who so hated me, whatever the reasons the devil had given him, I don't know to this day, that he tried literally to end me off in the ministry. I saw in the same man who tried to destroy me, I saw respect in those eyes one day later. I saw respect so deep that it stunned me as I looked at his eyes. I might never have ever had that treasure to hold on to of what I saw in that man's eyes if I had defended myself. If I had given him what he needed, in the eyes of the world, give him back what he can, tell him what he is, the coward, the wrong, the unethical. He says, "Oh, I would have lost, having seen in man that was an enemy, made me his enemy." To see that man now looking at me with respect in one moment. Why? Because I looked to God for grace I knew I didn't have to pass this exam in God's eyes and men's eyes. And I've learned something. I've learned that no matter what difficulties you're going through, no matter what trials you're going through, no matter what tests or exams you're facing, no matter how hard they are, God will always give you the grace, if you look to Him, to pass. I don't care what the devil's doing against you or men. I don't care how trying. I guarantee you, you look to this God for grace to pass the exam in God's eyes and men's, He will give you all the grace you need. All the grace you need, if you just look up from your heart, cry for it before you react. I often, from that time, had occasion to think of the words my father-in-law said. I remember thinking of it after that incident, shortly after, sitting and thinking about what he said about the school of God is the same as secular school. You're in standards and you have to face exams, and unless you pass, until you pass, you can't go, and if you fail, you're going to have to go through them again, so pass. It's exactly the same as secular school. And I thought back after that incident to when I was at school, a boy at school. I remember I failed one standard. That's terrible to admit, isn't it? I thought being at school was for sport. I had no idea I was there for academic. My mother and father didn't know what to do with me. I was very unsaved, let me tell you. But I really loved sport. I lived for sport. Most South Africans do. It's a tragedy of our land. Sport and fun. That's what I was at school for. Poor mummy and daddy didn't quite know what to do to get the message. It all caught up to me, you know. It all catches up, and I failed. And I failed terribly one year. Oh my. I remember, as I sat there thinking back suddenly, after all those years, of not even thinking of it, Suddenly, like a vengeance, it came back on me, the horror that had gripped me as a boy. The horror that just riddled through me when I realized I failed. Do you know what it was that caused the horror? It all came back, though I'd forgotten. The horror that gripped me as a boy was when I was conscious, the consciousness that I had been left behind. When we started school, we all started the same neighborhood, same school, even the same preschool. Then we were all enrolled in the first sub A, sub B, standard one. We all learned the same things. We all faced the same exams. We all went to the next standard. We were all there, 90-something percent, 99%, just the same boys and girls, right up, year after year, next standard. And suddenly, all these that started with me, I was suddenly, for the first time, oh, it was a horrific feeling. I was conscious. I was left behind. They're going ahead. They were conscious. They were leaving me behind. But I failed. So they who had passed were going on. They were conscious I was literally left behind. You can't not notice. Everyone notices it. And it was grief in their hearts too, I'm sure. But oh, my grief. My grief. Suddenly I saw all those who started going ahead and I'm left behind. I was a failure. That's all there was to it. I failed. Do you know in the Bible, Paul rebukes people who fail like that? Listen to what Paul says. He speaks with rebuke to those who he says, by now you should be able to be fed with strong meat, but here I am having to take you through the first principles of the faith all over, things you should have left behind before. Here I'm having to go over them all again with you, feed you as babes still with milk, when you should have been strong meat to men by now. And they were failures who he is writing to in the school of God. Well, the children that went ahead, they were gaining new knowledge, learning new things, applying, sitting through new tests, new exams to face, going higher. Here I was, going over the same things all over again that I'd been through before because I didn't pass. Stuck with the same things. Unable to learn further, unable to grasp deeper knowledge. It's a terrible thing, you know, to fail. In secular school, it's a terrible thing to fail. In the school of God, it's a terrible thing. I wonder how many there are, those who name the name of Jesus, who fail. As any test, anything that isn't perfect in circumstances, they fail. Oh, to fail and fail and fail and fail and fail. I remember as a boy, my uncle, my mother, when my granny and grandfather died, my mother was the one that the whole family rallied around. My mother had nine brothers and one died. Nine brothers and sisters. And they were all married. Sunday nights, we weren't a religious family. We weren't saved. Sunday nights, all the family would come to mommy when granny died. Oh, it was wonderful to have all my cousins, all my uncles and aunts, both sides of the family. Here was the home ground. We all meet as families once, right through the years, as he grew up. Oh, that's the night for the family. Sunday night. They all rallied around my darling mother. Well, one of my uncles, his name was Moon. Now you might think that's a terrible name to call a person. He was a very big man and he had no hair. Just this round, shining face. So they called him Moon. Everyone called him Moon. It was late in life when I found out what his real name was. Uncle Moon was what we call the black sheep of the family. I hope you are not called the black sheep of the family. The rest of the brothers and sisters were achievers. They achieved in everything, in their businesses, in their sports. There were a few of them who were South African champions in sports. They are my brothers and sisters. They were achievers. But Uncle Moon was the black sheep of the family. He's quite content to be, by the by. All Uncle Moon wanted, it seemed, all he lived for, and I don't think there was anything else he lived for, was to make people laugh. And that's terrible. But that's all he did, and he certainly... Well, we just had to look at Uncle Moon and we laughed. We didn't have to listen to anything. He really was hilarious. And he was so loved, you couldn't believe him walking through a city. You can't be... Everybody knew Moon, and the moment they see him, they just start laughing. And that's true, you know. When I say everybody, I mean many. Well, on Sunday nights there, the grown-ups, the children were never allowed with the grown-ups. That's something about South African society when you're small anyway. All the grown-ups would go in the lounge and the children were never allowed in the lounge. All the cousins, we just played outside until darkness, then we went into the bedrooms. We so enjoyed it. But there always came a point, we'd go to the lounge, and there in the lounge, of course, the grown-ups, they would speak of two things, politics and sports. Nothing else was ever discussed. Most South African homes, it's a terrible thing. Politics, South Africa, where we were heading, what was going to happen, and sports. You dared not speak on anything else. But there they were, all the grown-ups. Politics, fighting it out about politics, fighting it out about sports. We always, at some point of the night, every Sunday night, would go, all the children standing in the passage saying, Uncle Moon, Uncle Moon, come. It didn't take much temptation, you know, to make him leave the grown-ups. There he comes. Want to be with the children. We'd get in the room and all sit around the floor and all over the bed around him, our arms around him. Tell us stories. Tell us jokes. Tell us about the war. He was a prisoner of war, you know, with the Germans. We felt sorry for the Germans, to be honest with you. When he told us things that he did. Well, most of those things you wouldn't believe what he did in the prison of war camp. Even there, Uncle Moon. Oh, we used to laugh and laugh. One night, we were talking about this thing of failing school, you know, failing at school. I think it was one or two of us that had done it by then. And Uncle Moon looked and said, oh, don't worry about failing. Uncle Moon used to fail all the time at school. Terrible. He says, you know, when I went to school, look at the size of me. He says, when I went to school, I was bigger than all the other boys and girls. I just had to look down at them, you know. Same age, but then I failed. And then the next year I was bigger than all the small little boys. And I failed again. You know what they did? They pushed me up. They were so embarrassed, I didn't have to pass. Fancy that, getting through school like that. He said, and I failed and failed and failed, and they pushed me. And I failed and failed. Oh, I failed so much at school. He says, you know, it came a problem to the government, to the education department. They had to think of how to work out a pension scheme for someone still at school. That was terrible. At least I hope he was joking there. Well, I tell you something. It's a terrible thing in the school of God if someone's like that. All you do is fail. Every single exam, you fail with the lips. If things aren't perfect, you fail in your church. To others who just aren't perfect, to you. Anything goes wrong, you fail with the lips. You fail. Terrible thing, you know. The saddest and most tragic moment in your and my life in the school of God is when I realize and everyone else realizes I've just failed the exam God entrusted me to endure, the test I was facing. I've just failed God, and that moment is realized more than anything else when out of these lips come words that should never have come from a child of God. The saddest and most tragic moment in the school of God is that moment when I suddenly realize and everyone else suddenly realizes I failed God. And that moment is realized more than anything else when out of these lips come words that should never have come from a child of God. Oh, it's a tragic moment. It's a tragic moment when you realize and everyone else realizes you've just failed. You've just failed. And the test God allowed you to face, the test God put you in and allowed in your circumstances, you just failed. And if it isn't tragic to you, if it isn't tragic to you when you realize and everyone, then that is a greater tragedy. If it isn't tragic when you know you fail with the lips, then that is a great tragedy written across your life by God and men. I was once sitting in a convention like you, hundreds of people. Lunchtime in the dining hall, all around the tables, I was sitting with a number of preachers and missionaries in this great convention. And there opposite me sat a lady, a missionary, who I had revered from when I was first saved above most Christians. Her godliness, her integrity, her example. She had said these words to me when I was a young believer. She looked at me in the eyes and said, "Keith, what you cannot say to a person's face in love and for the glory of God, you cannot say at all. Because if you do, you're a coward and a grief to God. What you cannot say to a person's face in love and for the glory of God, you cannot say at all. Because if you do, you're a coward and a grief to God." There this woman was sitting at this table with all these preachers. And I was sitting, we were eating. Two preachers sitting beside me began to speak about someone who wasn't there to defend themselves. These two men suddenly decided they were going to destroy this person's testimony, his honor. And they were talking things that I knew weren't true because I knew this person better than they did. And I knew this isn't true. They're destroying him. Destroying the trust that could be ever shown toward him again from everyone at this table by something that's a lie. They were scandaling and destroying with the tongue as a deadly poison. Oh, the damage the tongue has done. I know of nothing that has done more damage to the work of God and caused more hurt among the people of God than the tongue of Christians. I know of nothing that has done more damage to God's work and God's people than the tongue of Christians. The deadly poison, an unruly evil full of deadly, God doesn't say that if it isn't. It destroys. It murders men. You don't have to take a knife and stab a man in the back to destroy him. To kill him, no, you might lose your testimony doing that. Oh, many a man has been murdered more cruelly by the tongue of Christians. Many a man's honor, many a man's integrity, many a man's usefulness destroyed forever in one moment by the tongue of Christians. Here they were doing it. I could hardly swallow my food. I was in such a state, praying, "Oh God, I don't want to offend them. I've got to stop them. What can I say to stop them doing, destroying this man?" Before I could say anything, this godly woman who had been the example to me, what words she had uttered to me I had striven to attain in life. This woman, not realizing, just sitting with such men was an exam. Just being in the company of scandalmongers is a test, a difficult test. And she failed. Caught up in the atmosphere, she suddenly started talking also, saying things she could never have said to the person's face in love and for the glory of God. Never would she be able to. Do you know, these men had been a terrible grief to me. But this woman, the shock, I put my knife and fork down. I sat back so shocked. She looked at me. Silence came on the table. The tears just welled up in his eyes. Her eyes as she looked at me. Flowing down her face. I didn't mean to make her feel bad. I didn't mean to condemn her. But one look at me and she was weeping. I knew why she was weeping. The others trying to say, what's wrong? What is it? And she began to weep louder and louder at the table, sobbing. I knew why she wept. You see, it's a tragic thing. It's a tragic moment. It's a tragic moment when we realize and others realize that we've failed God with the lips. And if it isn't tragic to you, then that's a greater tragedy. If it isn't tragic, if you don't weep when you know you failed God with this unruly evil, when deadly poison came out and destroyed someone, undermined someone. Oh, it's a tragic thing. She wept so loud, she got up, and as she walked, the tables just stood up because of the reverence of her life in our country. Looking at her, no one knowing why, she just sobbed, broke, and walked out the dining hall. She failed, you see. Tragic thing. In the school of God, I have had many teachers. I have learned many lessons from many teachers. Oh, such godly people that God gave me to see. Men and women who themselves were students in the school of God, but because they so excelled in passing every exam they faced, no matter how much difficulties came on them, they became examples of the believers. They became examples of the believers because they excelled in passing no matter what tests they faced. And do you know God doesn't turn to the old in the Bible and say, be an example of the believers? Paul wrote to Timothy and said, let no man despise thy youth. Be thou an example of the believers. In word. From today. From today. If no man despise thy youth, be thou an example of the believers. In word. From today. Stand, please, come. No appeal. No appeal. I want our brother to come and close in prayer.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.